Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. And a very spooky hello to you, Mike.
Hello.
Mike, we are now in haunted season. We are in spooky season. And we talked
happy
last time.
Happy Halloween!
Yes, happy Halloween to all of our listeners out there. And we thought, let's revisit an all-time favorite game that we covered very briefly back in our younger days.
And before we realized that we should give these games full credit and full time.
This game deserves two or three episodes, but we're going to try and cram it into one full episode today. So the episode this week will be Resident Evil 4. Now, Mike, where in your mind does this game, when you go back to being a teenager, this game comes out in 2005. So you're...
No. I was 19 when this game came out. I was 18, baby.
18. Were you hyped for this game? What did you think of this game at launch?
Yes.
It's on a Nintendo platform exclusive. Yes. What were your thoughts?
So this is one of the Capcom 5, to which I think we got 3, right? I have to look into what the Capcom 5
I know
were.
Beautiful Joe was one of them, I believe.
Yeah. The Capcom 5 were Beautiful Joe, P&O 3, Resident Evil 4, Killer 7. And a game called Dead Phoenix, which I don't believe ever released.
I don't know what that is.
Those are the Capcom 5. These were 5 Capcom games that were of an elevated level that were going to be released specifically on the GameCube. Now, Beautiful Joe is a terrific game. I love Beautiful Joe. That's a 2003 game. Resident Evil 4 is obviously a 2005 game. Killer 7 is a 2005 game. And PNO3 is a 2003 game. So I've never played PNO3. I don't remember it. I don't really remember much about it. It's a game I should probably check out at some point. But I mean, it was directed by Shinji Mikami, who is also the director of Resident Evil 4. So I got into Resident Evil on the PlayStation, really just playing it with friends at sleepovers, playing the original game and a little bit of Resident Evil 2. And obviously all the trailers and stuff for Resident Evil 3. But I really got into Resident Evil with the remake of the first Resident Evil. Now, the remake of the first Resident Evil releases, I believe, in 2002 on the GameCube. It's a GameCube exclusive. And for those of you who were alive at that time, and for those of you who were gaming at that time, that was a gigantic release. Resident Evil... Now, granted, similar controls and all that stuff, but Resident Evil getting fully remade only one generation after the original game had come out. Now, the original game is 1996. This is 6 years later in 2002, but it shows you how big of a shift there could be at that time in graphical power and processing power just in one console generation. And I got Resident Evil on the GameCube. I'd rented it, actually, and then I eventually bought it. And I was so hooked to this game. I thought the original Resident Evil remake was so good. I had played, I had played Code Veronica on the Dreamcast a lot before this game. And I had played Resident Evil Remake and got really excited. So I got Resident Evil 0. I got Resident Evil. I then went back to the PlayStation and played 2 and 3. I didn't get 2 and 3 on the GameCube. Looking back at it now, I probably should have because they're worth a lot of money now.
I think the remake and 0 came out the same year on the GameCube, right?
If it's not the same year, I believe that Resident Evil's remake releases in like March of 2002, rather.
And so I remake, think correct, zero, is March of 22. You're right.
Yeah, it's March of 22. I think you're right. And
0 is November
zero
of 22.
Later that year.
2002,
yeah.
Which was really cool because we think of Resident Evil previously as mostly Sony. We did get on the N64. Yeah. We got Resident Evil, but it wasn't an exclusive, correct? We got N64. We got, which was Resident Evil 2 or 3? Code Veronica, N64. We got
N64 got Resident Evil 2, I think. It might have gotten 3, but I don't remember. They ported those later. I think the Resident Evil 2 port to N64 is actually pretty solid for an N64 game. Now,
Resident Evil Dreamcast also. So they were kind of spreading the love around. Yeah,
Dreamcast also got the ports, and most famously, Code Veronica, which was a Dreamcast exclusive before it was ported to the PlayStation 2. Now, PlayStation. Now, in 99, Shinji Mikami he's a director of the series, and he was talking about a sequel that was in development for the PlayStation 2. And then Resident Evil 4 really started development in 99, right? They started developing on this game really, really early. And the original idea was to kind of make it this like cool and stylish action game and kind of base it off of that kind of vibe. We also have, at the time, we have Hideki Kamiya, who is working on Resident Evil stuff, but as well as Devil May Cry. Yeah. So Devil May Cry and Resident Evil 4 kind of developed at the same time. Now, this game went through a large shift. So the development on Resident Evil 4 starts as a game, which becomes Devil May Cry, right? It becomes a stylish action game. They move it to Devil May Cry, and Hideki Kamiya runs with it. They restarted development on this game in 2001. And they first made this announcement that there was going to be 5 games developed for the GameCube, the Capcom 5 we talked about before. That was in 2002. Then they start working on Resident Evil 4. They start showing off screenshots of Resident Evil 4. There's this version with a guy with a big hook and a mansion and Leon and all this stuff. And it seems like this game is turning into like vaporware, right? Like this game is never going to happen. And then eventually Capcom gets their stuff together and they create the Resident Evil 4 that we've become so familiar with. And was I hyped for this game? Yes, I was super into Resident Evil at this time. And it just looked like the next giant leap. And I was so excited. I pre-ordered it at the GameStop that I had worked at. And at the end of 2004, because this game comes out in January of 2005. Mm-hmm. At the end of 2004, the very, very beginning of 2005, they put out a demo of Resident Evil 4. It's the demo that you kind of play the same demo. If you played the Resident Evil 4 remake demo, it's pretty much the same demo. It's the, you're in the town and you have to escape the chainsaw guy or fight him or whatever. So I remember getting that and playing that demo and being so just completely taken by how good this game was. And going back and replaying it and replaying it and replaying it. Like, I couldn't get enough of this. So when this game eventually comes out, it was a huge deal. I was completely taken by storm by Resident Evil 4. And I couldn't have thought of a better experience at the time for the series and for this game in general. I thought that it was just absolutely terrific. And it was one of those games that kind of created and paved this whole new path in a genre that had gotten tired. By this point in time, we had the Silent Hills, we had the Fatal Frames. Like, every company had their survival horror. We had Alone in the Dark, which came back as a different kind of thing. We had Parasite Eve. And these are all great games. Like, most of those games I really, really enjoy, especially Parasite Eve and Silent Hill. But it felt like everyone was making a survival horror at this time. Even Capcom had another survival horror series, in actually two other survival horror series with Dino Crisis and Onimusha. And the style of that, with the fixed cameras and the kind of static backgrounds, started to get really tired. So they reinvented the series and they reinvented the genre by creating Resident Evil 4, this over the shoulder, more third person kind of action shooter game. Now, granted, this is 2005, so you couldn't walk and shoot at the same time. If you wanted to shoot, you had to stop, hold the button down, pull the gun up, and aim, which I understand for some people now is a pain.
At the time, it didn't seem like a hindrance, Mike. At that time,
no.
You felt like you had so much more control than you ever had before. When I looked at the fixed camera games from before it, they felt slower, they felt mm-hmm. sluggish, and I felt like I had no control over my character. So really, at that time, you had games like you said, like Silent Hill, Fighting Force, these action or horror games yeah. that were fixed camera, or you had first-person shooters where you had absolute control, but you didn't feel that emotional connection to the character. Yes. This was like a hybrid where you took that fixed camera, you took the first person, by sticking it over the shoulder, it's amazing what a huge departure it was. But like you said, the tank controls, for me at the time, it didn't feel like I was hindered by that. It felt like I was free now to control my character, but I felt like Leon Kennedy.
Absolutely. It definitely feels like you're in his shoes.
It's a huge deal when you can now give the player full control over where you're aiming and how you're controlling your character versus the previous Resident Evil games where you're on some sort of backdrop and you're kind of running around in it, but it's auto aiming. You don't feel like you're really controlling the character freely.
No. It definitely feels like you're a tank, right? You're this human tank and you have to like turn and stuff. And you kind of have that in Resident Evil 4 too, but because you're behind the character and right over the shoulder all the time, it doesn't really feel like you're a tank, right? Now, granted, you're kind of armed like a tank. This took away the feeling of atmospheric horror, right? Resident Evil 4, in my opinion, is a less scarier game than Resident Evil, the original Resident Evil or Resident Evil 2. I think this game is less scary, but I think that they...
Because of the focus on action.
Because it's more of a focus on action and your enemies are smart or smarter than the zombies were, right? You're not fighting zombies in Resident Evil 4. You're fighting these cultists who have been infected with the Plagueis parasite that turns them into kind of like these superhuman, in some instances, kind of like these borderline superhuman enemies that you fight, and they're very hard to kill and take out. And I think what Resident Evil 4 does, where it takes away the atmospheric horror, where you're walking around tight corners in this mansion and conserving resources and finding keys and dealing with the silence of it all until you come across a really slow moving zombie. They, in order to make the game still feel like it belongs in a horror genre, you obviously have the same grotesque imagery that you would see out of a Resident Evil game with the monsters and the villagers and the blood and the guts and the bugs and all that stuff. But they make it more of like a thriller, right? This game is more thrilling than the other Resident Evil games. The other Resident Evil games are kind of slow. They're kind of methodical. It's about the slow, impending, creeping doom that's around the corner. Resident Evil 4, yeah.
The best analogy I could use, and you tell me if I'm there, is the original Resident Evil games prior to this felt like Alien.
Yeah.
Where you're on a ship, it's all atmospheric horror, and it doesn't, the focus not on the action, it's the focus on the survival in that moment, where to go, how to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
While this game, and maybe 5 and 6 more so, turn just straight up action games. That's more Aliens, where it almost loses some of the horror of it. I think this game does a good job of bridging Alien and Aliens, where it's still, I don't think it completely abandons the atmospheric horror. I still feel it from area to area, from location to location, to some of the cultists and some of the fog and some of the areas you're in. But compared to the originals, I agree with you. The shift now is to the power, your forearms, your kicking, your drop kicking, all the different cool stuff you could do, and suplexing them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about 5 and 6 because those are bad games, mediocre.
So that's Alien 3 and 4, let's say.
Yeah, I would say that's that. I think the Alien to Aliens comparison is really strong, and that's a comparison I would make naturally. And I do think Resident Evil 4 still has the horror elements, just like I think Aliens still is scary. There's something terrifying about that. But what's terrifying about Aliens versus what's terrifying about Alien are two different things. What's terrifying about Aliens is, and aptly named, right, the Alien Isolation game, right, which is named Isolation because you are alone on that ship, essentially, with the one xenomorph, but the one xenomorph is slowly but surely picking off the entire party and the whole travel party. And at the end of that movie, Ripley is alone having to deal with this monster that is incredibly powerful. In Resident Evil, that's like that. It's like the slow creeping doom of the zombies and the slow creeping death of everything around you. It's about not being able to even find solace in a save room because you know the second you walk out that door, something might be there to kill you. Resident Evil 4, as you said, is a lot more like Aliens. And what's scary about Aliens is not, it's not the fact that the characters are alone, even though Leon is alone in this game, but the characters have the tools necessary to deal with the threat.
Right.
But in Aliens and in Resident Evil 4, what makes it so, what makes it a horror game and what adds the horror element to it is the pressure. Leon in Resident Evil 4 can't catch a break. And we will see this style of horror continue.
Oh, yeah.
To kind of propagate this series, but also be a major influence on games like The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
The Last of Us is so unsettling because it feels like you can't rest, not because you don't have the tools necessary, and sometimes you don't in The Last of Us, but it's because you're constantly under pressure.
Yeah, from at every turn, yeah, the unexpected is waiting for you. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you can be prepared, and this game does probably prepare you better than most. You're not looking for a single bullet, where sometimes in previous games you're just looking for any ammo to attack an enemy. Here, you generally can find and upgrade your weapons enough, but you're right. It's just the abundance of things that just keep coming at you. I think you said it right. Last of Us, a great one. I think Dead Space is even more so a ripoff, not a ripoff, but an homage to Resident Evil in that it's more of a horror and more sci-fi. I guess they're both sci-fi, but Dead Space to me, if you played the remake or the originals, the over-the-shoulder, yep, the horror of it, the monsters and creatures that you're fighting in the game, and the isolation aspect of it,
yep,
I think is then that's years later. Dead Space is years and years after this game.
Yeah, Dead Space is what? Is that like a 2009 game?
It's a late 2010? 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, maybe 2010 or 11.
It's a 360 game, so.
Yeah, it's a 360 PS3 game, yeah. I agree with you completely. And Resident Evil 4's influence extends so far. So far. I think the success of Resident Evil 4 is one of those things that I think people figured it would be successful. I mean, it's kind of hard for it not to be successful at this point from a monetary standpoint, because I'm pretty sure Resident Evil 4 is about as accessible as Street Fighter 2. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure you can get Resident Evil 4 everywhere. I think every console has it. And
Mike, I think this was almost for Capcom a Mario Kart 8 or Smash Ultimate situation where the series peaked and it actually hurt them, because the following games, you say you don't really want to talk about them, but they weren't a problem. And they got back there, I'd say, with 7 and 8 and all the remakes. They've gotten back to that peak again. But it was a long time. It was a very long time where we didn't know if the Resident Evil series would ever recover. And 4 was such, what's like you said, it was like ported to everything. Keep bringing it back. Bring it to PS2 came shortly after.
The Wii came within a year.
But Wii ported to the Wii. It was a great version. And it continued to be ported to systems after that, because they had really found the sauce, or the perfect sauce.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to think, this game comes out on the GameCube in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out on the PlayStation much later in 2005. It hits the PC in 2007. Hits the Wii in 2007. It's on iOS in 2009, 2010. It's on Android. In 2013, it hits PlayStation 4 and Xbox One in 2016, Nintendo Switch in 2019, and the VR version of the game, Oculus Quest, in 2021.
Yep.
So this game has one of the longest releases of all time.
It's like Skyrim type releases. Yeah.
It's on Skyrim. It's ported to everything. Like, Capcom wants you to play Resident Evil 4, and I feel that the Resident Evil 4 remake will be in the same boat.
Yeah,
I feel like Resident Evil 4 remake, Resident Evil 2 remake, Resident Evil 3 remake will all be released on as many consoles as they possibly can, because they have something special. They have something special. And those remakes wouldn't exist if it weren't for the original Resident Evil 4. And this game, obviously, you said before, influenced Dead Space. It's been an influence to essentially every over-the-shoulder kind of shooting game ever. So we want to talk about Gears of War. We want to talk about Uncharted. We want to talk about The Last of Us, Dead Space. But it's also an influence to itself.
Mm.
And yeah. Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 and Resident Evil 4, all those remakes don't happen if Resident Evil 4 isn't as good. Like when Resident Evil 2's remake came out, you could tell they were kind of like, okay, we want to make Resident Evil 4, but make it the story of Resident Evil 2. And now, yeah, you add the ability to move and shoot at the same time. You add some quality of life improvements. But the Resident Evil 2 remake, before the Resident Evil 4 remake, was probably the best game in the series. And before the Resident Evil 2 remake, Resident Evil 4 was the best game in the series. So for me, Resident Evil 4 and its remake are among the best games in the series, if not the absolute best in the series. And on top of that, I think Resident Evil 4 is probably in my top five favorite games ever. It's one of those games that to me felt like this watershed moment. So yes, you're 100% right. There's no way for Capcom to recover after making a game this good. Yeah. And the only way to bring Resident Evil back was to remake the old games in a more modernized style that was reminiscent of Resident Evil 4, or completely change the playstyle again with Resident Evil 7 and 8. I mean, people even will argue that the new God of War games borrow from Resident Evil 4 with their over-the-shoulder kind of playstyle. So yeah, this game's one of the most influential games of all time.
Like, well, we talked about how special it is in terms of the combat and the gameplay and the changes there and the camera angle. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Resident Evil always ushered in the best production quality that was available at the time. Going back to the original, even on the PS1, that game had cutscenes, FMVs, art style, sound effects that were top of the line. And this game ushered into Resident Evil to the series.
Yeah.
The best writing for a story, even though some of it might seem hokey now, some of the best graphics, some of the best voice acting that were available at that time.
It's a full package. Back in those days, the game series that you would go to for the top of the top in terms of production value, there were three that I could think of off the top of my head. Resident Evil was always among the best because it has to be, right? It has to have good production value or it loses everything it stands for.
Yeah.
Like if it doesn't look incredibly good, then it's not scary because it just looks like brown mush. Final Fantasy at that time, Final Fantasy was the top of production. Final Fantasy 10 and 9 and 8 and 7 were the best looking things and the best produced games of their time.
Yeah.
I agree. And the third is Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear Solid falls in the line with that, with having voice acting and facial expression.
What's funny is you talk music about before how Resident Evil got a remake on the GameCube. Well, Metal Gear Solid also got a remake on the GameCube, another PS1 title that got graphical upgrades and quality of life improvements. So it's funny how two of the really classic games on the PS1, only a generation later, got a remake, Metal Gear Solid, which again, usually pushes production and pushes what's available, did that on the GameCube as well.
No, absolutely. And
the GameCube was a little powerhouse. I mean, people don't remember, but Nintendo was pushing things at that time. Resident Evil 4, this game was probably, if you look back at the console, one of the most impressive.
I think it's Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube is, I would argue that this is the best GameCube game.
It's always in the top three. If I'm making a list of best GameCube games,
it's this and Metroid Prime.
Yeah. Oh, Metroid Prime. I mean, people forget because of the new remake remaster, but that game for the GameCube on the time was pretty.
Like, don't get me wrong. I love Wind Waker, but that game's unfinished. You know, I love
bring sunshine. Keep your sunshine at home.
I love Wind Waker. I know I'm being 100% serious. I love Wind Waker. Wind Waker is among my favorite Zelda games.
No, that game is. They had to fix it on the HD version.
Yeah. They left out two dungeons and the game just kind of ends out of nowhere.
There are beloved games on the GameCube, whether it's Eternal Darkness, Thousand Year Door, Soul Calibur 2, Double Dash, but none of those I think can compete toe to toe with the two you just said, Resident Evil 4.
And Metroid Prime, right?
And Metroid Prime. Yeah, I don't think you could put Twilight Princess. I don't think Smash Melee
is probably three.
It's probably three for at the time, its impact was incredible. It took a 64 game that was just a concept, and that game is still loved today. So those are probably the top three GameCube games. And Resident Evil 4, you're right, it could be number one.
I mean, you can absolutely make a very good argument for why it's number one. I'll tell you this much too, Matt, to support what you're saying here, and I agree with you fully. Resident Evil 4 and Metroid Prime being the two best GameCube games, I would not bat an eye if any person on this planet had one, if not both of those games in their top five or top 10.
What's like, funny is they both got remade earlier this year, which is hilarious. Of course they did,
because they're really good. Like when people, it's become very in vogue to trash on games like Metroid Prime, Resident Evil 4, Final Fantasy 7. It's become very in vogue because the internet, for some reason, rewards people that hate on things that are popular. But if you look at it, like, I say this about Final Fantasy a lot. There's a reason why Final Fantasy 7 got remade to the degree in which it got remade, because it's that good and that special and that important, and those characters are that recognizable, and the designs are that memorable, and the music is that good, and the story is that good, and the dialogue is good, even though it was translated poorly. Look at what gets remade. And I'm not talking about cheap dollar bin ports like your SpongeBob Bikini Bottom or the Gargoyles or anything like that. I'm talking about games that get incredibly...
Well, they put hundreds of billions of dollars into making a dedicated, proper remake with respect and care. Mm-hmm. And any other year, you might even say Resident Evil 4 was your game of the year. I mean, this was a heck of a year.
It was. So
and Metroid Prime, some years could have been. This was such a good year that I probably can't, but it was as good as any game that came out this year. And that's wild that we're talking about two GameCube games from 20 years ago.
It's crazy. The GameCube is a console that, while the console was experiencing its life, it was a hard console to fight for.
Yeah.
Because it felt like it had nothing. When Xbox and PlayStation were getting like home run games at least every other month, and the GameCube was getting maybe one great game a year. Yeah, in hindsight, it's 2020. Looking back,
the PS2 took its lunch.
Yeah. Looking back, the GameCube had a good library. But if you lived and you were a GameCube gamer during the GameCube period, it was very, very difficult. So you
people
had to
did not respect games like Skies of Arcadia, Eternal Darkness. Those were games were laughed at the time, while PS2 was getting games, all-time games like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, exactly. And GameCube had nothing to compete with it. So we had to cling to games like Resident Evil 4 when they were GameCube exclusives.
It was one of the few games that I could laugh at my PlayStation friends or Xbox friends and be like, we got Resident Evil 4, baby.
And then when Resident Evil 4 was ported to the PlayStation 2, it was a worse version of the game.
It was.
And so I clung to games like Resident Evil 4 and Tales of Symphonia and stuff like that, being like, well, this is the GameCube only experience. And obviously your Zeldas and Sunshine is whatever.
It's funny how almost all of those games, Tales of Symphonia, Bait and Cat, Kados, I probably pronounced that wrong. Those games are all being brought back. It's so funny. They're all getting ports and remasters because we're all nostalgic for these games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there is a nostalgia for them there. But Resident Evil 4 is really good. It's an incredible game. It was definitely my best game of 2005. I understand God of War came out that year too, but I like Resident Evil 4 a whole lot more than God of War. And I do like God of War, but this whole different situation where Leon is in Spain and he's fighting this cult. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's great horror movie tropes. The verbs that Leon has are incredible. All of his weaponry is amazing. The ability to upgrade your guns is so cool. The merchant is unbelievable. The gunplay is top notch. The ability to mix in these kind of like melee moves where you kick people or suplex people or blow up dynamite in their hands. The mercenary side stuff that they add after the game is incredible. The villains and the boss fights are unbelievable.
Yeah, really, you know, good.
Really good stuff. The separate ways Ada Wong content is really, really good.
Well, that's actually topical, Mike, because as we're releasing this, I know you've been playing through it on the remake. They just released it. That was really cool. We didn't get that extra content on the GameCube, unfortunately. That was later, I believe, brought to the PS2 version, the PC, and the Wii game.
Yeah, there was Assignment Ada.
Yep.
Which I think was on the GameCube. But then there was Separate Ways.
Yeah.
Separate Ways, I think, was added to...
And Ada's Report.
Yeah. That was added to, I think, the PS2 version. Maybe. I don't know. I've played this game so many times in so many places that I forget which version.
Yeah, all versions include Assignment Ada and the Mercenaries. Yeah.
Well, the Mercenaries rules. That I played. Yeah. Forget it. That's like an arcade. That's like arcade Resident Evil, and that's awesome.
I also love the fact that, I don't think we even talked about this last time, I love that you can play through this game and then play through it again. with upgraded weapons.
Yeah. New game plus, baby.
And that wasn't always a common thing in video games. Nope. And a game like this to come in now with a powered up shotgun or just having resources you didn't have the first time around, it's playing the game a whole different way.
It just makes the game more fun.
Yeah.
It gives you this kind of experience where it's like, yeah, I don't need to labor through this game again.
Right.
Allow me to have fun with it. And then the better you get and the more you play the mercenaries and you do all that stuff, you unlock all these special weapons and special costumes. And by the end, you've got the hand cannon that just liquefies every zombie you hit. Or if you play the Wii version, which is actually a really good version of this game, I would argue that the Wii version is among the best of the Resident Evil 4 ports, especially when you're playing with like the Wiimote. It works really, really well. You get the Plagueis laser and all that stuff, which is really, really cool. But yeah, no, this game is just so memorable. It's so good. There's very few games that are like it at the time. It felt so wholly original and different. And it's just such a great jumping off point for future games and future playstyles in general. And ultimately, right, the Resident Evil 4 remake is every bit as important and as good as the original Resident Evil 4 was.
So we'll talk to that a little bit, Mike. Tell us, because the remake's been out for almost a year. It's been obviously a jam-packed year, so this game, unfortunately, I feel like it's going to be forgotten come end of the year when people talk about games released in 2023. But what are your overall impressions comparing to the original in terms of respect, how the game has grown, how it still honors the original?
I would argue that Resident Evil 4's remake, because it's just the best version of Resident Evil 4, really, I would argue that Resident Evil 4's remake is the best Resident Evil game, because you took the best game and made it a little better. It's pretty much just takes Resident Evil 4 and modernizes it. Like, Resident Evil 4 was already incredibly modern for its time, and obviously it has staying power.
Some people don't even feel it needed a remake, but I think after the remake, now people see.
I think it did. I think it did because you had the Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes. Once you had the Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes, you're like, oh, I get it. Even though these are heavily based on Resident Evil 4, even Resident Evil 4 can deal with some modernization. So I think the Resident Evil 4 remake is just the best version of the game. And everything it adds is good. Everything it takes out is good. It gets rid of the QuickTime events and all that other stuff. Really, there's some little you hit X and you do something, but like, it's really not a big deal. And the QuickTime events were kind of invented for Resident Evil 4 originally, but obviously all of gamers got sick of them. The boss fights are every bit as good, if not better. The tension's really high. I feel like they made the game a little bit more, they put a little bit more pressure on the player. You have modern aiming reticles and all these things. So I think the remake is just the best version of what Resident Evil 4 was trying to do.
Is there any reason to go back to the original? I know you love the original. Is there any reason now in 2023?
I don't think so. I think the ability to parry with your knife and all this type of stuff, they added like modern stuff to the game, like parrying and running gun and all that stuff. I really don't think there's a reason to go back. Like, I think when I play Resident Evil 4 now, moving forward, I'm just going to play the remake because it's just that good. And Separate Ways, the Separate Ways DLC is incredible. It's very, very good. Ada is an incredibly interesting and fun character to play as. She does really cool stuff. She has a whole bunch of her own special moves that are really, really cool. And what's funny, I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter, or is it called X now? I'm not quite sure. So I was trying to figure out like what's better, Resident Evil 2 remake, Resident Evil 4 remake, what are the better games? Because if you asked me 2 years ago, hey Mike, what's the best Resident Evil game? I'd probably tell you the Resident Evil remake for 2. The Resident Evil 2 remake is probably the best one because that's the best of both the original style and the Resident Evil 4 style. But Resident Evil 4 comes out, so I asked this question and someone responded saying Resident Evil 2 is a better remake, but Resident Evil 4 is a better game. And it took me a second and I was like, what? And I sat down, I thought about it. I'm like, no, it's true. Resident Evil 2 needed more done to it to make it a modern game.
Right.
So the remake of Resident Evil 2 is a more significant change. Whereas the remake of Resident Evil 4 just feels like perfect Resident Evil 4. Mm. Like, I'm
that
not sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sure.
Heavy, Resident Evil 2 had a lot more heavy lifting to do in the remake.
Yeah.
To change that game.
I'm not sure what reviews Resident Evil 4 remake got across the board. It definitely seems like it's a high nine. I'm looking at some reviews right now. I think Metacritic probably has it in the low 90s. But to me, Resident Evil 4's remake is a 10 out of 10. It's a masterpiece. I think it's everything that this game was and is and should be and could be. And it's one of the absolute best things I've ever played. I'm definitely going to have Resident Evil 4 remake on the short list for my game of the year in 2023. I don't think anything is going to beat Tears of the Kingdom. I think Tears of the Kingdom is, like Breath of the Wild, a unique once-in-a-lifetime experience. But I think Resident Evil 4's remake is every bit as important as any of the games in the top five. It's up there with Street Fighter.
Well, let me ask you, Mike, now that Resident Evil 4 is complete, people feel like it's everything it should have been. As a Resident Evil fan, where do they go from here? Besides, obviously, new releases, which they'll continue to do, do they go to 5 and 6? Do they try and change them? Do they try and go to Code Veronica? Do they go to the original? Do they go to 0? Or do the remakes continue? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would love to see a remake. I know people are going to hate me for saying this. I would love to see, because Resident Evil 2's remake is so good, I would love to see a remake of the original Resident Evil. Remake it again in the modern style. I would love to see that. I would love to see Resident Evil 0 get remade. Code Veronica. I love Code Veronica. That's a game I would absolutely love to see get some sort of remake. I think I don't like 5 and 6, but after playing Separate Ways, and this is a spoiler, so for those of you who want to skip a spoiler, please skip ahead. At the end of the Separate Ways DLC, you see Wesker is on the ship that he's on in Resident Evil 5. So to me, that was them pretty much telegraphing that Resident Evil 5 will be the next remake, and that Resident Evil 8 had so much Chris Redfield, it makes sense if they remake that. With Resident Evil, I think that's going to happen. I think we will get a Resident Evil 9 proper. I think we'll get some sort of Resident Evil 9 game eventually. I would love to see a Resident Evil 9 game, or, you know what, remake 6, but like completely remake 6.
6 needs the most work. You can say what you want about 5. 6, like, for me was rough.
Almost make 6 like it's completely erase the original Resident Evil 6 and just give us a Resident Evil 6 where you play as the four leads.
Right.
Like, give us a game where we play as Leon and Claire and Chris and Jill, and that, or make that Resident Evil 9. I think Leon will show up in Resident Evil 9 since we had Chris back in Resident Evil 8. And I think we will get a 9, and I think we will get a 5 remake. And ultimately, I think we will get a 6 remake. But I think if they do remake 6, I think they should just scrub it. Get rid of Wesker's son. Get rid of all that stuff. Just do another core Resident Evil story. Maybe you play as one character. Maybe you just play as Chris. Or maybe you just play as Jill. Or maybe, who knows. But I would love to see any of the old games get remade again.
There's some controversial stuff in 5 and 6 that I don't think would play well with modern crowds, things that probably shouldn't have been done back then, Mike, that I want to see how they would translate that to a modern as well.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that too much, but there definitely is some cultural insensitivity in Resident Evil 5, especially bad with it. So there's got to be some way to get around that in 2023 for sure.
But to bring us all back to Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube and PS2 and so forth, it did even better than the remake on Metacritic, giving it a 96 out of 100. It was in the top two ranked of that year that came out. People say this is one of the best video games ever made. We said today just on the GameCube alone, but this should be in the conversation for most people in terms of most influential, most important, and greatest games ever made. As we talk about the many series that were inspired by Resident Evil 4, not to mention its own series. So this is a game that I come back to all the time. Me, still the original. I'm still yet to put too much time into the remake. But to me, I still love the original. I can still boot it up on the Switch and have a great time, Mike.
I think it's one of the best games ever made. Like I said, Resident Evil 4 and its remake are probably, I put them in the same slot on my top games ever. It's either in my top five, and if it's not in my top five, it's number six. It's one of the absolute best games ever made.
Well, it did pretty well, 12 million copies combining all versions released. So That's pretty no good. Slouch. It took a while because 300,000 on the GameCube in the beginning is not going to get the job done. But then around the whole world, and then bringing it to PS2, it got to several million copies because obviously the PS2 had a much larger install base.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most best-selling console of all time. So
that must have helped significantly. So
I think so.
And the PC release, I mean, I've showed you where sometimes they sell copies of this for like a couple dollars on Steam, the HD version of Resident Evil 4.
It's worth it. This game, it's cheap. If you haven't played it, find it somewhere and play it.
So that is our remaster, our redo conversation on Resident Evil 4, one of the truly great games, most important games all time, solidifying its place once again in our Hall of Fame, Mike. So thank you for talking about this one. It was time to talk about it again.
I think so. And I'm happy that we were able to celebrate Halloween by doing it.
Awesome. So that'll do it for us this week. Mike, where can people out there find you if they wanted to hear what you have to say, do, and whatnot?
Sure. You can find me here on the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcasts as we talk about excellent, excellent video games. You can also find me with my band, Bad Mary. Search us out, badmary.com or at Bad Mary Band on your socials. You can also find me at the Batman Tasticast, which is another podcast that I do about Batman. You can find us all on the social medias at Batman Tasticast. And last but not least, you can find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. Search out LI Retro or Long Island Retro Gaming, wherever podcasts and videos are sold.
Awesome.
So, Matt, I'm excited to talk about the next one.
Yes, we are. So guys, check out our back catalog, leave us a review, do all of that good stuff because it helps us so tremendously and makes what we do feel that much more important. And then also look out because I think me and Mike, as we inch closer to the end of the year, we're going to start recapping this year and talk about some of the awesome games that came out this year. And then also talk about 2024. And lastly, we always have some sort of fun holiday tournament conversation, so I'm sure we'll have something in the next couple months to come.
Yeah, we got to figure out what we're talking about.
We sure do. We had the best characters was a fun one.
Best characters was good. Best years was good. Best consoles was good. I don't know what's next.
I don't know either, but I'm sure we will have something fun that we can argue about for an hour.
I have an idea. I have an idea that I want to talk to you about.
Best Sonic game.
That's an oxymoron.
I just sometimes like to drop things in there that makes Mike's like his brain just like fart because he's like, what do you mean best Sonic game?
I saw IGN's Sonic list of best Sonic games and it was stupid and awful. Like folks, there are the best Sonic games. There are two of them. It's Sonic 2 and Sonic Mania.
The problem
and
that
is it.
Even some of the others they consider top 10 are not even like average video games.
They're bad games. they're bad games. Once you're like, oh man, we need to put Sonic Adventure 2 on this list.
The problem is like
I played tons of Sonic Adventure 2, but
sure. The problem is like when people say Mario Sunshine is whack and unfinished and it's not as tight, and I get all that.
And it is.
And it is, and I would not put it in a top 5 best Mario games. It's still better than probably most or all Sonic games ever made.
Oh, yeah. The fact that we're even having this conversation in 2023 is ridiculous. There's another conversation that's dominating my feeds lately, which I'm not going to start here because I know Matt and I have disagreed on it before, and I don't feel like starting that conversation. But I would like to wrap up this podcast by saying Super Mario World is a better game.
The other one I heard, which I liked, is Spider-Man games are carrying on the lineage of the Arkham games because Rocksteady's now moved on to Suicide Squad, that Spider-Man is now has, you can like sneak around, you have the combat, and I kind of like that idea. That
I actually agree. I don't think the Spider-Man games exist without the Arkham games, and I think that the Spider-Man games are getting progressively better, so that's good. That's a good thing.
Why is Rocksteady not working on another Arkham game?
It's because they're stupid and they're chasing Fortnite.
Or is it not up to them? Is it up to the higher ups?
It's probably not up to them. I mean, I want a Batman animated series game.
Or Batman Beyond. Give me anything. Give me anything.
Yeah, we have a Batman Beyond game. It's called Spider-Man 2.
I'll take a Silver Age Batman game. Give me anything.
I'm telling you, man. You want Batman Beyond? Spider-Man 2? He has a wingsuit. He can pretty much fly now. Just play Spider-Man 2. It's really good.
Guys, thank you so much. Enjoy your Halloween haunted time. We'll see you guys all next time.
Later.
From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.
I think what we're seeing, what we're going to start seeing is we're going to see a lot of these like services start to get prohibitively expensive or cease to be. I think even for the video, even for like Netflix and stuff.
Well, the streaming and I think Game Pass too. I think Game Pass, before you know, it's going to be $40 a month.
I think Game Pass is going to go away before that. The thing with Game Pass is here's the problem. And people don't understand this. And we've said this, I think, maybe on this show. I don't remember. But Netflix has never made money. Netflix has been essentially in the red since its existence. I don't know how it gets valuation of being worth X amount of billions of dollars. But like,
and it's considered the most successful of the streaming services, which is terrible.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all bad. And the problem is that the creative companies that make these products, right, they all jumped on the bandwagon and started saying streaming was the future, and then they realized how much money they were losing. What these companies really want is they want DRM, right? They want you to buy the movie from them directly and run it on their platform. Like, as much as we like to trash Stadia, Stadia probably had the most functional model that could actually survive. Because you would pay a monthly fee for Stadia and then pay for the games individually. And you'd get some games for free with Stadia.
I just think too small percentage of people have the internet bandwidth for Stadia. It wasn't ready.
At right. Well, no, it's not that. I think more people have it than we'd gather. And you didn't need great internet to run Stadia. I run PlayStation. I think that could be part of it too. I think it doesn't interest people because of that. I think honestly, it's a multitude of factors. But I think also, on top of that, Stadia, I think, was prohibitive to people's pricing. Because it's like, wait a minute, you're telling me I'm paying $9 or $10 a month, and then I have to pay $60 for a game?
Right.
Like, that's crazy. And that shouldn't be how it is in terms of what the public expects out of a service that's streaming. The problem is that it costs money to develop video games. And video games cost... You know it. We've talked about it. $250 million, $500 million.
The same problems with movies and TV shows. It's all in a bad place right now. Things are getting too expensive.
And back in the day, you would get investors to make a movie and then you would put it in the theater and then you'd make your money. Then you'd make your money back. Now it's you're using your subscriber base to fund other projects. But if those projects aren't bringing in subscribers, then... Right. Like, that's the thing. People are afraid of physical media going away. Physical media is not going... The scary thing about physical media going away is most people don't care. Most people, 99, 95% of people do not care if physical media goes away. I think the problem is, and what people like me are concerned about, it's not the fact that I can buy things digitally on Amazon. Like, that's great. That's access. But I'm not buying.
Right.
The movie on Amazon or Apple. I'm buying the license or the right to play the movie.
Right.
And if Amazon or Apple loses a deal, I can no longer access stuff that I paid for. And that's the problem. And that's the problem with video games. But I do think that, I mean, Microsoft, like they said this week, they need to get a certain number of subscribers on Game Pass, in their opinion, by 2027, or they will drop out of the console race. Well, they will no longer make consoles.
Disney is smart in that they're starting to release their Marvel Disney Plus shows on physical media.
Mm-hmm.
They figure we already have the subscribers that we're going to subscribe to watch this, but people will buy it again to own. Physical media at the end of the day has saved projects that lost money. They then made it up on physical media.
I mean, that always used to be the case, right? If a movie tanked, you make money on the DVD sales. And rentals, that's why, right? Rentals, of course. Well, maybe on rentals, right? Or you'd make it up on, you go to Amazon and you buy the movie on Amazon for $15. I'm telling you right now, I was kind of like, I wasn't feeling the push to buy anything physically for a long, long time. But with pretty much every major retailer saying, hey, we're going to cut physical product, because I know what it's like. I mean, I worked at GameStop. Yeah. I remember the burden of physical media when a GameStop would close and how the company would have to figure out how to divvy up all that product and inventory. And it was crazy. Like, we would get like, oh yeah, what the heck is GameStop going to do with 5,000 copies of Madden? Like, no one's buying that. We can't sell it for more than $5. we're going to take a bath on it. And I think all these companies have all of this inventory that's just sitting there. And I think Target, Best Buy, all of them are just, they're just loaded
up. We haven't hit the bottom yet. These streaming services, if you saw in the last year, have gotten desperate. They're doing like free trials, 99-cent trials. They're getting really desperate for subscribers. We're going to hit the bottom in the next few months where Disney and Netflix are going to keep raising their price because they're the only two that are consistently.
I think Disney might sell.
It'd be interesting.
I think Disney might drop out of the race completely. I think that they might drop out of streaming and sell.
They just raised the price again, $30 for the year. Starting November 1st.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Netflix, it's $22.99 a month.
January. Yep.
So I think what's going to happen is I think some of these companies. So
it's going to end up being like paying for cable again. If you got two or three of them,
it's already paying for cable.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen ultimately is I think Peacock gone, Paramount Plus gone.
Yeah.
It's more beneficial for those companies to sell.
Yes.
Their content and license their content out to the other streamers.
Do you know which major company didn't make their own streaming service and continues to rent their properties out to Netflix and other ones? They're making a killing doing it.
Well, it's definitely not Fox, right? Nope. Because Fox is part of Disney.
Hulu and Disney, yep.
So let me go through them all. CBS
has major motion picture company that never started a streaming service. You can access their stuff on Netflix, on Peacock. Everyone else rents and buys
there. Disney obviously has two of them.
Yep.
We will get to Resident Evil 4 at some point. Disney definitely has two of them. They have Hulu and Disney Plus, which probably in itself is a mistake, and ESPN.
Yep.
CBS is Paramount, right? Fox is Disney. ABC is Disney.
I can hint what movies they made.
Universal is Peacock.
Mm-hmm. I'd say they make a lot of...
Warner Brothers is Max, right?
Yep.
I mean, I don't know. What are the movie studios are... Well, Sony.
There it is.
Sony.
There it is.
It's Sony. And Sony's gonna laugh all the way to the bank.
So when the Spider-Man movies come out, and Netflix gets the rights, then Disney Plus gets the rights. Each time they're like, all right, give us $100 million and you can have it for the next 6 months and have it for the next year.
Yep.
And they didn't have... It's whoever held out doing things like that is making all the money.
I think what will eventually happen is all of these companies will sell their content as packages.
I was going to say either that or Peacock and Paramount will have to shove their shit together and say,
I honestly think I think it's going to be bigger than that. I think it's going to be... No, you're right. You have a point. You have 100% point there. And I think, it's going to be like a cable package. It's a cable package. But like on top of that,
I don't want to have seven different apps on my TV. It's annoying. Oh, which one is it? I have to find a movie. Which one is it on?
Well, the problem is that it's this whole big capitalism, right? So eventually what's probably going to happen is there's probably going to be three streaming services. In the end, there will be Apple and whatever Apple owns, there will be Amazon.
Amazon won't go away because they're just too successful on their own. The video stuff is just side business for them.
Yep. It's Apple. It's Amazon. What's funny is that Amazon didn't make any money on their retail for like 20 years either. So, which is crazy. It's Apple, Amazon, and probably Netflix. And I think Disney realizes, like Nintendo realizes, Disney might stay around. They might, but Disney might, there's also rumors that Disney might sell out the company to Apple.
Yeah. Eventually. I've heard stuff like that for years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it all depends. Bob Chapek or Bob K. Yeah, whatever his name is. Bob Chapek got a lot of crap for how he managed the company, and people really disliked him, and Bob Iger kind of hated him and didn't let him succeed at all. But the problem there, though, is that this guy comes in after Disney already started the streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
He pushes everything to streaming because they can't open up their parks. Because Disney's largest driver of revenue is the park.
And the movie theaters were also not bringing people in because it was COVID.
So during COVID, your biggest moneymaker is the park. Like half of Disney's revenue comes from the parks. And that's mostly merchandise sold at the parks because they pay literally nothing for it and charge you an arm and a leg. Money. Yeah. So the parks are everything. That was Bob Iger's funnel. Bob Iger's funnel was like, we want to get people to the parks, and then our content will make them think about getting back to the parks. So that was his thing. And then when you can't go to the parks for 2 years, you kind of lose your business model.
And his solution's been, so far his fixes have been cancel projects because those things aren't bringing in money, raise costs of things.
Yep.
And I don't know if people will... So far, people are going to parks still, but...
Make the parks cheaper. He's made the parks cheaper again.
Yeah.
So I think... I don't know. I think we're
a year or two away from a real big crossroad where these companies can't... They won't be able to... It costs them too much to build original content for the services.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bring in people, they realize
it. Well, it doesn't bring in money. And you know, you're almost better selling it to cable. You're almost better putting it on TV.
Yeah.
And I think also what you could do here is I honestly think we're getting close to a media crash. I think that they can't pay the actors what they want to be paid.
Nope.
They can't pay the writers what they want to be paid. I think they're going to try to use AI as best as they can. Spotify is going to start paying artists even less.
So crazy.
So it's one of those things where...
I think we had one positive breakthrough was this Taylor Swift movie.
Yeah.
I think it's going to make people think, hey, what if we made a Blink-182 movie? Linkin Park movie, a Broadway show that people can't access in New York. And maybe it already closed on Broadway and they can say, here, 2 weekends only, come to movie theaters to see Hugh Jackman in
Music Man, or they did it with Hamilton on Disney Plus.
They did it for Hamilton on Disney Plus, but I think
but if that
they
was did during theaters, COVID,
make events of concerts and performances.
Well, that's the future, right? Because content's probably going to get taken over by AI.
Yeah.
So I think in the future, I think it's live events that are going to be the real moneymaker, conventions and stuff like that. So we'll see. Anyway.
Yeah, we should already four.
Resident Evil 4.
We could talk about the doom and gloom of media.
It's just kind of the fall I hate to say it. It feels like the fall of kind of like Western capitalism, it feels like, to a degree. And I'm not like saying this as like a communist. I'm just saying it as like, you can kind of see it. Things have fallen apart. Not to mention the war and the and the environmental issues. And it seems like everything's coming to a head. And I'm trying to like be objective about this. I'm not even trying to give you my political view on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like people are like, World War III is coming. I'm like, I think we've been fighting the Second World War for 80 years. I don't think the Second World War ended.
No, things are in weird places.
I can't get too into it because I'm going to get really mad.
But we still have Sonic Frontiers, and that's what we should be thankful
that
for.
That game sucks. Matt, I just want to let you know the world just confuses and frustrates me, and people confuse and frustrate me, but at least there's video games to talk about.